This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Cottawa, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Marcus Vanderberg, and no Big Nasty, at least not for the first segment.
Not this week, no.
Yeah, he's got family coming in town, the King of Zamunda, Dr. Cunningham. So it should be great, as long as, I don't know if you really want to bring him to the hood, though.
Well, it's like I'm into America, you know, when they move to the hood, so. Paramount, now, Queens, it's all the same.
Yeah, now just picture, like, everywhere Alfred's dad walks, some girl is throwing flowers at his feet.
Yeah.
Great movie, Coming to America. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. One of the few movies Marcus Vanderberg has actually seen.
Multiple times.
Yes. So, been a week since we last talked. How you been, brother?
Good, man. Nothing new really in my part of the world. So, we ended the show last week talking about how I was going to go trade in my car. And I went to the dealership and they gave me an offer and I laughed and I left. So I still have my car. They wanted to give me $12,000 less than what I paid for 7 months ago. So
the depreciation is a bitch.
Man, I tell you, once you drive off that lot, it's a wrap. That's a lesson, boys and girls.
So it's worth it more to get the current car fixed?
Yeah, it's all under warranty. It's just, you know, it's a time thing. Time is special, limited, and for me to go over there, drop it off, for them to have it for 5 days, and it's just, I mean, this has been a process now. I've dropped it off there 6-7 times, so after a while, you just like, is it worth it? But yeah, I mean, it's under warranty, so every time I drop it off, it's cost me nothing. It's just the time and effort and frustration, so I will be keeping the car.
Yeah, that's what you get for listening to Ric Flair. Why don't you get a Mercedes-Benz like a real man?
Yeah.
So yeah, Marcus is dealing with his first world problems, but there are others dealing with problems on the hardwood. Of course, the NBA playoffs in full swing. We are in the midst of what seems like a week-long break, but actually the games will resume this weekend. The Heat and the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals tied up one game apiece, and the San Antonio Spurs up on the Oklahoma City Thunder 2-0. That series resumes on Sunday. Which conference do you want to start with, Marcus?
Let's start with the East.
All right, let's start in the East. The Heat lost to the Pacers 107-96 in Game 1, which some people saw as a shock. I didn't really, because, you know, the Pacers, I thought, were going to come out motivated. The Heat came back and regained the advantage, 87-83 in the second game, and now we head to South Beach. And I think it's going to be this kind of series for the rest of the way, Marcus. I don't see this game ending any sooner than in 6 games.
I could see it going 5. I just have a feeling Miami.
You can see the Heat sweeping the next 3 games.
Yeah, I can see them definitely winning the 2 in Miami. I joked on Twitter that Miami's biggest home court advantage is having Indiana come to Miami during Memorial Day weekend. And try to stay focused on basketball when there's so much going on.
Having Lance Stephenson on South Beach.
Yeah, and especially with this way, I mean, the break, they have 3 days off before game three, and then they're there till Monday night. So it's just like they're caught in the middle of the perfect storm of distraction. And as we know from this season, this team gets distracted easily when it comes to women. Going from Paul George to his whole thing with getting catfished to Paul George and Roy Hibbert, allegedly. So I think that's their biggest advantage, and I could see Miami jumping out to a 3-1 lead. And then the question would be, would Indiana, as we've seen in the past, have not really put up much fights at home? Would they put up a fight in Game 5 to force a Game 6, or would they just sort of roll over and concede?
Yeah, man. Paul George has like 99 problems, and bitches are all of them, if not most of them. But I agree. I don't see it ending in 5, but I do still think Miami's going to win this series. I'm going to pick them in 6. And I think, you know, for all of the fire that the Pacers showed in Game 1, the quiet secret is Dwayne Wade has been having a very solid playoff season. And, you know, you got to give – if we're going to give Popovich credit for resting, you know, the big three during the regular season, I think you got to give Spo some credit for the way that he's managed Dwayne Wade's minutes during the regular season. And now D-Wade has, I won't say completely fresh legs, but fresher legs than we've seen for most of the season now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. This was a good strategy that they implemented this year. He seems healthy. He scored 20-plus points the last three games going back to the Brooklyn series. So he's playing great. He's playing almost 40 minutes a night out there. So far, so good with the knees. Speaking of knees, Wade's knee did take out Paul George, which could be a factor in Saturday's game if he can't go because of a concussion. And, I mean, Paul George told himself he really should have kept his mouth shut in that press conference. And why he was being so honest and decided to say he blacked out and et cetera, that's just asking the league and the team to step in and implement a concussion test. So
I was going to say, for those out there not familiar, I know the NFL concussion policy has been getting a lot of headlines lately. What is the procedure in the NBA?
Similar to NFL, you have to pass a test. And, you know, once you pass the test, then you're cleared to play. But when you say, when you're telling the media that I blacked out on the court and I returned in the game, I don't even think he came out after that knee.
No.
So that's not good. So I'm sure the lead will make sure Indiana's extra cautious before putting him back out there. And if he doesn't play game three, then I don't see how Indiana wins without Paul George.
No, not at all. I think the Heat win both games in Miami. I think the Pacers win when they head back to Indianapolis, but then I can see, you know, when the series returns to Miami, the Heat just closing that out. And I don't think all of the games are going to be close because, as we've seen throughout the playoffs, you know, you never know which Pacers team you're going to get. They've been very schizophrenic.
Yeah, they have been. And we haven't seen the best of LeBron yet. You know, it's
no
probably been since that 49-point game, where we've seen LeBron just take over, and he's due. In one of these games between now and if it ends in 6, he's going to have one of those games where he just dominates. And, you know, when he's rolling like that, it doesn't matter who they're playing. There's not many teams and or players that can stop him.
Yeah, if you're a Pacers fan, you know, that's what would concern me. It's that, you know, this series is so tight, and LeBron hadn't even had a LeBron game yet.
Yeah, he's had efficient games. He's had, you know, what you'd come to expect from LeBron, but he just hasn't really, you know. And I thought he was doing a need to take over in game two. Was until the final fourth quarter. They were pretty much, they were struggling. I thought for sure they were going to blow that game, but, you know, Indiana coughed it up, but that was more Miami proving that they're the two-time champs and they know how to win on the road and, you know, they're not afraid to come down or to rally like that.
And, I mean, you got to give credit to the Heat bench players. I mean, they're not the best bench or the deepest bench in the league, but every now and then you'll get, you know, Ray Allen or Norris Cole or guys like that step up and give you, you know, 5 or 10 quality minutes. And as we saw in game two, when, you know, Norris Cole came in and gave them that instant energy off the bench, that started a shift in momentum.
Yeah, I mean, Birdman had a great game off the bench, 12 rebounds. They shifted Batty to the bench and moved Udonis Haslem to the starting lineup after Batty started game one. So I think they're trying to go big against Indiana. And between Haslem and Birdman, they both did their roles.
Yeah, and so now let's switch it over to the West. Speaking of going big, go big or go home is the saying. And the Thunder have not gone big in the first two games of the Western Conference Finals, but they are going home. The Spurs up 2-0. They won game one, 122-105, and then blew them out 112-77 last night. Do you see Oklahoma at least getting two games out of this series, or is it a foregone conclusion?
I think without Ibaka, it's a foregone conclusion. I can see them splitting at home this time around and San Antonio going back up 3-1. And at that point, I think the Spurs close them out in five.
Yeah, I mean, it was 2 years ago when they were down 0-2 to the Spurs and they came back and won that series. And that's kind of what the Thunder fans are hanging their hopes on right now.
But that was the James Harden years.
Yeah, I was going to say, not only did you have Ibaka, not only did you have a Kendrick Perkins that, you know, was actually, you know, a force, but you had James Harden. And you know, without either of those components, you know, Harden's gone, Ibaka's out, and Kendrick Perkins is kind of a shadow of his former self. I don't see any way that they can take down this Spurs team.
Yeah, and I mean, they just... When Scott Brooks gets fired, I think we will look back at the series. And, yeah, you can blame Ibaka, but offensively, Oklahoma City, they don't run plays. They just freestyle it, and you can't do that against a team like San Antonio because they're so efficient on offense that you need to score to keep up with San Antonio. And when you don't have a set offense, then it's impossible to keep up.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, when the previous series was going on and everybody was like, who would be the worst matchup for the Spurs? I thought the Clippers by far would have been a tougher challenge for San Antonio.
They're pretty similar in terms of their offensive style. They have two guys in the middle with Duncan and Splitter compared to Blake and DeAndre. But both teams love to spread it out, shoot the three, and both teams are pretty efficient on the three. And Doc's a good coach. I think Pop is the best coach in the league, but Doc is right up there. So I think in terms of the coaching advantage, it would be pretty close. But when you're comparing Popovich to Scott Brooks, that's not fair.
No, it's not. And my favorite thing, you know, with this postseason for the Spurs has been Tim Duncan, because he'll give you those. And I don't want to throw shade on Timmy, but he'll give you like those old man classic games. We'll put up 25 points or 24 points in the first half and then finish off with 27.
Yeah, and part of that
is because he does just enough that he's not going to overextend himself.
No, but he's not. He hasn't played 30 minutes yet in the series. That's part because they've been such blowouts that he's had a chance to rest on the bench. He's had a rest for his new girlfriend, too. You haven't seen her?
No, I didn't know Tim Duncan had a new girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't he married?
Yeah, oh, yeah, he got divorced.
He's like, I didn't see, that's how you do it. You win championships and you keep your business off the streets.
Vanessa Macias, Macias.
Okay, let me look this up right quick. Look this up. Okay, Timmy, got you a little younger.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
it's
Timmy.
The fountain of youth. That's how you stay young.
Yeah. Who said it wears out your legs?
Yeah.
good for you, Timmy. But, yeah, so heading into the playoffs, I chose the finals. Of course, I'm not going to detour from that. I assume you're thinking that this is where we're headed as well, Marcus?
Spurs heat, yep.
And let's just kind of project ahead of, you know, assuming both teams come out of their respective conference finals. Do you think that this year it will be as great as last year's finals were, do you see this year being even closer, even more competitive?
I mean, I don't know how you can get much closer than going seven, and essentially game six should have gone San Antonio's way. So I think it will go six or seven, and I still put my money on the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't bet against the Heat, but I think, you know, I'm going to go with San Antonio, partly on sentimental reasons, but also because this team is just very well constructed. You know, they made a point last night during the broadcast to say, you know, draw the comparison between the Spurs and the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have, what, 3 first-round picks in the last 20 years or so?
3 in the last 4 years they've won the lottery.
Yep, and I think it was like 4 in the last 20 with going back to Brad Daugherty.
Yeah, that sounds right. And, no, more because LeBron was the first round.
Oh, yeah, LeBron. So they've had at least 5
yeah.
first-round picks in the past 20 years, and they were talking about their success versus the Spurs, who haven't had a first-round pick since Tim Duncan. Of course, that's a hell of a first-round pick. But the way that they filled this team with international players, or veteran players, or guys from the D-League or the CBA when it was in existence. And, you know, you got to give credit to Pop, but also to these players that, you know, like The Rock used to say, they know their role and they go out there and play.
Yeah, and the big difference this year, San Antonio has home court versus Miami. So that game 6 or 7, or they change the format, so the game 7 would be in San Antonio this year, not Miami.
Yeah, so yeah, I would put my money on the Spurs, but I mean, you got to give credit to the Heat, you know. But there's another guy out there in the NBA that I always like to give credit to because he is one of the most honest and interesting and entertaining people in the National Basketball Association. And that's Mark Cuban, and he made some interesting comments recently, Brother Marcus.
Yeah, he did an interview that aired yesterday, or that was released yesterday on Wednesday. And, you know, when the Donald Sterling stuff happened, Cuban was one of the guys who said, you know, it's a slippery slope if you decide to take the team from Sterling. And while he wouldn't, you know, come out and say he was supporting Sterling, he made it clear that he was a little bothered by the league coming in, stepping in, and taking the team away. So he was speaking with Inc. Magazine, and the one quote that has been now bastardized to death that he said was, quote, "If I see a black kid in the hoodie and it's late at night, I'm walking to the other side of the street. And if I'm on that side of the street, there's a guy that has tattoos all over his face, white guy, bald head, tattoos everywhere. I'm walking back to the other side of the street." And basically he's talking about bigotry and how, you know, we all live in the last houses, so we shouldn't throw stones. And, of course, the first version of the story, actually Bleacher Report's involved, but Alfred's not here. But they had a sensationalized headline that they were running. And I saw earlier before the show started that I believe it was the founder of Bleacher Report or someone associated with Bleacher Report basically apologized and said, hey, we maybe should have crafted the headline better instead of trying to basically paint Cuban as a racist. But while I understand what Cuban is saying, and I do applaud him for being honest and speaking the truth, of course, the black kid in a hoodie line stood out to me because, you know, the comparison between that and a white guy with tattoos, it just doesn't, you know, add up to me. And Cuban did apologize today and to the Trayvon Martin's family because he didn't think about that comparison before he said the quote. But what were your thoughts overall about what Cuban said?
Yeah, and I don't think that, you know, this is an instance of Cuban, you know, being hateful and on the level of a Donald Sterling. I think it was just naivete and not realizing that when you evoke that kind of imagery, especially to an African-American person, what their mind is going to immediately go to.
Yeah.
And, you know, as soon as I saw the comment, the first thing that popped into my head was Trayvon Martin. And, you know, when you get into these generalities or stereotypes, it's icy. And he is right in the aspect that everybody's prejudiced. I don't care who you are. I don't care. You could be the most liberal person in the world. You still hate somebody or you still think a certain way about somebody.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't fault him for saying that, you know, because he's absolutely right. I do think, though, that the problem with this is that, you know, what was the function he was speaking at? Was it like a symposium or a press conference?
Business conference.
Business conference. Okay. You don't, you know, like you mentioned, the statement was kind of bastardized and morphed and taken out of context, and we didn't really get the full context of what he said until after the headline, the sensational headline came out. But I don't know. I mean, honestly, if I see a black kid in my neighborhood when I'm walking down the street in a hoodie, or if I see a white kid when I'm walking down the street in my neighborhood with a hoodie, or a Latino kid when I'm walking down the street in a hoodie, I'm looking at all of them, because kids are crazy, whatever the race is these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the culture. And so, you know, I think I don't know. You know, it's like I see where he was coming from, and I don't think it was a racist statement. It's just kind of what are those Arsenio Halls, the things that make you go,
Yeah, I mean, he was basically saying I'm prejudiced. You know, that's more than most people would say. So I give him credit for that. I do think that if you watch the video, it gives you a better clarity and context of what exactly he was talking about. But, you know, as for the comment about, you know, kids walking down the street, I'm guilty of it. I've done it in the past, living in Harlem, where I've seen a group of kids walking on my side of the sidewalk. And, you know, if it's one person, I don't really have a problem. I can take them. But, you know, if it's a group of people... Yes, I've done the old, I'm going to walk inside of the street. I've got no shame in admitting that. And for him to admit that, I think he should be applauded, because, you know, what I find, or what's frustrating for most media people, is that when you talk to these players and athletes and owners, getting them to be honest is really tough. A lot of times they're just giving you rehearsed lines that are, you know, fed from PR people, and never do you really get a chance to hear an honest answer from someone on Cuban's level. So,
right.
I think my only issue is the hoodie comment he made, and he did backtrack about that, but he did stand by. He said he's going to stand by the rest of the comments he said. So, that was my only real big issue with that, was trying to invoke that, you know, a black man wearing a hoodie is dangerous. No, a black man wearing a hoodie is probably cold, like the rest of you. So, let's not just assume, because I have a hood on my head, I'm somehow dangerous. No.
Yeah, that to me, again, it's just, to me, it wasn't racist or prejudicial. It was just insensitive.
Yeah.
And kind of naive. And it's the same thing that I always, you know, with my Tea Party friends, when there was the big deal, you know, during the elections where they had Obama hung in effigy. And I was like, you know, that's real screwed up. And they're like, well, what? You know, the Democrats did it when George Bush, you know, was in office. And I'm like, but think, you know, there's a difference between hanging the imagery of George Bush and hanging a black president. Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay. I didn't even think of it on that level. And I'm like, yeah, you didn't. Because, you know, everybody comes to the table with their own experiences. And Mark Cuban, you know, having not been a young black man that, you know, has been profiled before, you know, that was not part of his experience, part of his worldview. But again, you know, I'm still a fan of Cubes. I think he's what the NBA needs more of, and that's honesty and transparency. And sometimes when you're honest and you're transparent, you stick your foot in your mouth.
And I think people have, you know, I haven't really seen too many people go after him today. So he's, you know, it's been talked about, but no one has really made the art. I haven't seen like a Jason Whitlock column, you know, calling for Cuban's head or anything like that. So I think people, for the most part, understood where he was coming from.
Yeah, he just got foot and mouth disease.
Yeah.
And that's a whole hell of a lot better, Marcus, than ear and mouth disease.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Boom. We're going to end things off. If I'm Major League Baseball, I'm pissed off right now, because we have not talked about baseball one iota all season, I don't believe.
We
haven't. This is the first time we're going to talk baseball in the A block.
Alex Guerrero of the Dodgers, my Los Angeles Dodgers, he is a Cuban second baseman the Dodgers signed this offseason, and he was in the minor leagues because he's new to the U.S., and they wanted to make sure he was, you know, comfortable second base, and et cetera, et cetera. So he's a highly touted prospect. He was killing it in Albuquerque AAA, and he got into an incident with veteran catcher Miguel Olivo, who's been in the major leagues for a while, and the two had an incident after a play, and they had a bit of an argument on the field. And then once they got back to the dugout, a fight happened, and during the fight, Miguel Olivo bit off part of Alex Guerrero's ear. More than Holyfield's ear that was bit off by Mike Tyson.
Mm.
And now Miguel Olivo has been released by the Dodgers. Alex Guerrero had plastic surgery to repair his ear, and he's out 5 weeks. Yeah. Baseball, everybody. Baseball.
First of all, I hate that this happened to anybody, especially this kid. It happened on one of my favorite minor league teams, the Albuquerque Isotopes. shout out to the Simpsons. Third of all, why? Like, seriously, like, who, in what world is that your go-to fighting move?
Well, funny enough, during spring training, he was interviewed by the Dodgers, and they were discussing if he wasn't playing baseball, what would he be doing? And he said he would like to box. And he even made a line about, oh, but I wouldn't bite people's ears off like Mike Tyson did. So he called his own shot in spring training. The signs were there, people.
Yeah, that's what we call foreshadowing.
Yeah. He had his ear to the ground.
Oh, man. So do you think this is it for him? I mean, he's been in what in the majors, in and out of the majors for the better part of 10 years.
Yeah, he's 35. He was up with the Dodgers earlier in the season. He got sent back down. I'm not gonna say this is it for him, but I mean, listen, Miguel Tejada sold him deals, and he's a cheater. He's been busted for PEDs, and he's damn near 40. So I'm not gonna say this is it for Olivo, but this is it for his Dodger days. He will never be a Dodger again, and I pray for him. The day he comes back to Dodger Stadium on another team, what kind of reaction he'll get from the fans if that ever happens.
Yeah, just kind of looking at his career right now, he's a career batting average 240, 145 home runs, just under 500 RBIs, and it seems like he's been on 1, 2, 3.
He's bounced around.
About 9 teams in 10 years, and he's never stayed longer than 2 years at any one stop.
Yeah.
So that tells me, especially at the catcher position, which is, you know, kind of your QB of the infield, if you're bouncing around like that, sure, there may be some issues with individual teams or individual organizations, but there's been lesser catchers that have stuck on longer than this dude.
Yeah, he's your traditional journeyman catcher. He's had some pop, and he can fill in where need be. But
I remember Mickey Tettleton with the Orioles. He was a backup catcher for like 7-8 seasons.
Yeah.
He never bothered nobody. He didn't bite ears. He just warmed up the bullpen and you know, did his job.
Yeah, so that's our first baseball story of the season.
All right. Well, I'm glad we didn't call Mike Oz in for this.
No.
Hey, Mike. Hey, what's up, guys? You want to talk about the great action, the division races, or what's going on with all these injuries? Nah, we want to talk about people getting their ears bit off, man.
Oh, here's our second baseball story. Your boy, who I remember, when this trade happened, you were trying to talk him up. Prince Fielder out for the season.
I'm saying, why are you trying to delight in people's misery?
No, I'm not. I feel sorry for Prince, but he's going to have season-ending neck surgery. And poor Tatis. Tatis is still hampered by the injury bug.
Yeah, this not only is this bad news for Prince, but this could be bad news for Uncle Ron.
I don't know, because even on top of that, Jurts and Profar, their star infielder who was out already, after the Prince Fielder news broke, we got an update with him today that he restrained a muscle in his shoulder from rolling over in bed, and he's out another 8 to 12 weeks. So, there's nothing Ron Washington can do at this point, and I would hope Tatis is understanding of that, because that team has been ravaged with injuries from position players to starting pitchers. They're just – and they're only 500. They're not completely out of it yet.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that they would be patient, but this is professional sports.
I'm counting, I count let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Prince would be number 13 on the DL for them. That's half the team.
Yeah. So, and we're not even to the midway point yet.
No. Not at all. But if you're a Texas Rangers fan, sucks for you. Sucks for you, Darvish.
And the I see what you did there. And the Tigers are currently in first place, so.
Yeah, that whole Ian Kinsler to Prince Fielder deal. Ian's winning.
Hey, it's still early. It's still early.
It's working out for him.
What was that Simpsons bit where remember Homer was barbecuing the pig?
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa was protesting and she shot the pig into the sky?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it's still good. It's still good. And then it fell into the ocean or the lake. It's just wet. It's still good. It's still good. It's just a little slimy. It's still good. Like, give it up, Dad. It's not coming back.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I still think Prince can have a productive career, but he's a...
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is the first time he's been injured.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is like his first major.
First injury ever. He had a 576 game consecutive streak that was snapped earlier in the week. So, he doesn't have... Even the man of his size, he's a big dude. Clearly not in shape, or, you know, not into quote-unquote shape. He's never had a history of injuries until now, so I think he can bounce back for sure.
Yeah. I mean, to quote the great white hype, he's in shape. Round is a shape.
Yeah, it's a bit shape.
And he's the world's fattest vegan, which I still don't know how you do.
No, he's off the vegan tip.
Oh, he's not a vegan anymore?
I don't think so, no.
Like, what were you soaking broccoli in pig lard?
Yeah, that didn't last long.
So I think in a roundabout way, having a year off may actually do some good.
Or he could gain a lot of weight in the off season.
Start looking more like his daddy.
Yeah.
Mm. Way to bring things down, Marcus.
I try.
So that's gonna do it for the A block for segment one. Coming up next, we have the ringside wrap, but I think I'm going to step away and maybe Big Nasty will show up, because currently it's Thursday night and TNA is on, so I got to support MVP and my new favorite faction in all of wrestling, Negro Lucian, as Marcus Vandenberg coined him last week. So that's what I'm going to be doing for the next 10 minutes or so. And
20
I guess
to be exact, actually. I can tell you it's going to be 20 minutes or so.
Really?
Give or take a few seconds, yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you predicting the future.
Yeah.
So stick up in the next 20 minutes and listen to Marcus and perhaps Alfred talk wrestling. And then I'll be back a little bit later on, unless Impact gets too good.
So you'll be back then.
All right, I'll be back. More Kings of Sport right after this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
It's not just any day. It's Mr. Throwback Thursday.
Hey, everybody. You remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do, too. My name is Jamie Robinson, and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host, Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT, or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
And now it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Nasty and Marcus on the West Side Connection once again. Nate is in part unknown. And we are using our Freebird rotation to exercise the Ringside Wrap. This past Monday on Raw, the big news was the update, or lack thereof, really, of Daniel Bryan and his impending neck injury. And what that's going to mean for his title reign, Stephanie McMahon came out, and for storyline purposes, after mocking Daniel Bryan's yes chant, which I kind of thought was brilliant, said that Daniel Bryan will have the opportunity to gracefully surrender the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. So it looks like for now he's going to hold on to the title. But Marcus, do you see Daniel Bryan holding on to his championship throughout his entire injury suspension, if you will? Or will Daniel Bryan shock the world and forfeit his title on Raw?
I don't see him giving up the title, but I think this buys him another week to get his net straight and actually get a correct time frame for his return. I'm sure they probably had no idea what exactly or when exactly he'll be back, so they decided this is the next best thing. But I think if the news is bad and if he's going to be out until SummerSlam, then yeah, he might have to hand up the title, or at least I would love to see them do an interim title, at least introduce the idea of doing something in the meantime, because for them to do another tournament or for the title to be vacant again would just not be a good look.
Yeah, and they went a lot of, I believe it was last champions, and that just does not help the value of the title. And I just feel like this is a placeholder for Daniel Bryan to where they still don't know when he's going to be back. I easily see Vince McMahon changing his mind 5-6 times the day of Raw next week as to what's going to happen. Is he going to somehow have it forcefully removed from him? Is he going to hold on to the title?
Something to where you can bridge this gap and have Daniel Bryan at odds with authority and have him try to bully him out of the title until Money in the Bank, which I feel you could make a guy by having him win the Money in the Bank and then challenge Daniel Bryan for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Say, hey, if you don't show up and defend this title, I don't care about your broken neck, you forfeit that title to me or we face off in a match. And, you can have him take a couple safe bumps there, but if Daniel Bryan is able to go at Money in the Bank, which is the absolute best-case scenario in July, that's something to where you could put over Daniel Bryan as a credible world champion, and he just fought all odds, and he was able to defend the title. So, I just don't think WWE knows what they want to do, but they do have opportunity to really make this title reign more interesting than it's been with him out.
It sets up nicely for SummerSlam. I mean, they have options now of what they can do. I don't think Lesnar versus Bryan would be a safe option at this point with his neck injury. So I'm not sure what they want to do with Lesnar for SummerSlam, but if they wanted to, have that person who wins Money in the Bank, like you mentioned, cash in SummerSlam, then there you go. There's your main event.
Yeah, absolutely. And, do you see Daniel Bryan on TV every week? In storyline purposes, or is there going to be a point where they just make him go away? I know you said you'd like to see an interim championship, but would you be comfortable with just not having Daniel Bryan on TV or having him take a back seat?
I would be comfortable if the alternative was him getting pushed around by his wife in a wheelchair. I wouldn't want that, or, if it's going to be something hokey over the top or anything like that, then yeah, it'd be fine if he just sat at home. But, I'm assuming he can get around all right. he looked okay in the interview I saw on YouTube after the day after the surgery. So, you know, if he can walk around and whatnot, you know, then they can probably find something for him to do that's non-contact and hopefully non-cane involved.
Yeah, definitely. Unfortunately, with that, the last time we saw him, he was being dragged out by Kane, and then Stephanie McMahon furthered that by saying, not only should he surrender the title, but he should surrender it to Kane. What do you think a Kane title run would do to that title?
Oh, boy. You guys thought Randy Orton was bad as champion.
Oh, yeah, now tell me about it. It's just that he's not the type of character. I don't think he's ever been the type of character who should carry a title. That's not to say anything bad about his career. I think he's overachieved as his demon monster, much like The Undertaker did, but he's just kind of a special attraction who I have no idea why he's in this feud. But we go from one injury, well, I wouldn't want to say injury prone, but one guy with a history of injuries from the Indies to another, which is Kevin Steen, who you saw the ROH New Japan show this past weekend, which is an awesome show. We'll get into that a little bit. But one of the big stories recently with Kevin Steen is that he kind of gave a bit of a farewell speech after the ROH show, a loss to Adam Cole at a recent show, and he may be on his way to WWE. There are already rumors that he has signed a developmental contract. He was one of a handful of name brand independent talents who did try out for WWE, and they liked what they saw. So, Marcus, what do you think the career ceiling would be for Kevin Steen in WWE?
It's a good question. I could see him... Wow. I would love to see how far Sami Zayn gets and then get a better sense of what guys, like, of his... Even though he's not as nearly as skinny as Sammy, but they're both the same size in terms of height-wise. I can't see him making it all the way to the top, but at the same time, I think he could be somewhere in the mid-card. I don't know how they're going to work in his height. We see of Rusev, you know, while he's stout and impressive, he's still pretty short, and I think Kevin Steen is even shorter than Rusev, no?
Yeah. 5'11".
Yeah,
and I think he's a little taller. Yeah.
Maybe a tag team.
With Rusev?
No. With Steen and someone else. Maybe from ROH.
Oh, okay. No. Nationalist gimmicks there. But yeah, I can see that. The thing is, recent history for Kevin Steen is actually on his side. You've seen the top indie guy usually gets a shot in WWE, and recently that was CM Punk, who was able to ascend to the top against all odds, and then that was Daniel Bryan. But I do think that Daniel Bryan's injury is going to make them cautious about that style of wrestling, because if you ever seen Steen go, he can go, but he's very physical, and his moves, and he has had his history of injuries. I was surprised that he was even considered, based on the fact that I don't think he could pass a physical to get into the WWE, based on just the mileage he's put on his body. So I think they're going to look at that, and they're going to be very cautious about putting a title on him, unless there's some kind of organic following, much like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk did have, which that can happen with Kevin Steen. He's a very talented guy. He's a guy who has the charisma that you don't usually see with independent talent. He's a lot of wrestling, but then again, he's a lot of personality. I've seen him live, and the guy puts on a great show. He's going to fit in perfectly, I think, that NXT intimate setting where you can hear guys talk and you can hear them talking in the ring. I think he's going to do great in that setting. But unlike you, as far as a ceiling, I don't think he's got WWE championship potential. But, you never know. That's what they said about Daniel Bryan.
Yeah. He's had a weird body shape. I mean, he's short. He has lost a lot of weight, but he's still kind of chunky. So, I mean, the guy wrestles with a t-shirt for a reason. I want to see what they do with that. You know, will he have to shed the t-shirt and just go put it all out there or what?
Yeah, I think you put it all out there, because he would just look so much different from everybody else in WWE, and he's lifted weights recently, and he's gotten himself in a respectable shape. He's not shredded, but, I mean, he doesn't look as fat as he has in previous years, but it's something to where I think that look would just stand out and be different. So I think that's why you would want to take the shirt off him and just have him bare all.
Yeah.
Another promotion that bared all on pay-per-view was ROH and the War of the World pay-per-view against New Japan Pro Wrestling. A couple weeks ago, they did kind of ROH Japan exclusive matches, but this week, this past weekend was more of a War of the Worlds to where it was intertwined, ROH versus New Japan. And, you know, that on paper already screams good wrestling. And for my money, I thought it was great wrestling. What did you think about the show, Marcus?
I saw most of the show. I didn't see the last two matches yet. But from the first seven matches that I saw, this was pretty entertaining. I enjoyed the TNA chance, which will lead me to another discussion later on about TNA and going to this Hammerstein Ballroom. But I am invested in the pay-per-view next month. I think I'm going to order it based off this show, based off of the teaser at the end of the pay-per-view with Danielson Kazarian coming in, and I guess they're going to be wrestling Red Dragon for the titles. So yeah, this was, I'm not a big ROH person only because it's, I can't get it out here in Los Angeles, and I really don't have the time to go out of my way to pirate stuff and watch it in my own time. But for this show, I went out of my way because I heard such great things, especially about the tag team match with Red Dragon and the Young Bucks. So, really impressed so far.
Yeah. And I know I'm like you, especially also being here in the Los Angeles area. I don't really get that much access to ROH, but this pay-per-view just made me want to follow the product more. And if you mentioned that Red Dragon Young Bucks match, I mean, go either way if you're listening to watch that match, because I mean, they do a lot of crazy stuff, and I've always kind of been a critic of the independent style and not really telling a story in the ring, but this is just straight wrestling, and it was an athletic spectacle, and it was just something that, you know, it's impossible to stop watching that match. I thought I was completely blown away by what they were doing. Again, I wish they would have sold more. I wish they would have slowed it down a little bit at points, but that, I guess that's the name of the game with Young Bucks. So, great pay-per-view. My personal highlight was Jushin Thunder Liger, who, I don't know if you're a PlayStation guy or played much video games growing up, Marcus, but I played WCW versus the World on PlayStation for a long, you know, chunk when it first came out, and Jushin Thunder Liger was my guy. And, you know, I did follow his career also as, you know, one of the first international talents I really became acclimated with. The guy can still go, and he's what, like, in his mid-40s?
Oh, easily. He's, I can tell you, hold on one second here. Jushin Liger, 49.
Oh, my God.
50 in November.
You think about how decrepit The Undertaker looked, no pun intended, at age 49, and Jushin Thunder Liger, I was surprised at some of the stuff you pulled off.
Yeah, it's, he's, in much better shape in terms of physically. I'm guessing he's had way less surgeries than Taker. But yeah, considering he's going to be the man of the mask, is going to be 50 November. That's pretty impressive.
That's crazy, man. And you talked about the Hammerstein Ballroom and, you know, always pretty much tearing the house down there. But yeah, let's touch on TNA going there. They're going to do five shows in the Hammerstein Ballroom. Okay, it's New York. It's WWE country. New York fans are brutally honest. What do you think the fallout's going to be? Are they going to get crucified, or are they going to be able to book around being in front of such a hostile crowd?
I think the fans will give them a one-night pass. If that first night of tapings is shit, then I think the rest of the time in New York could be awful because, you know, that crowd is notorious. If you haven't seen ROH this past weekend, go back and watch some of the ECW stuff with the WWE from 2005 or 6 when they had shows at the Hammerstein, and especially the John Cena Van Damme match where some of the chants coming from the crowd directed towards John Cena were just vile. Just even for John Cena, it was just, I mean, Cena sucks dick and Cena swallows and just all types of stuff. And I think, you know, the rumor is they're doing this because they're trying to impress the folks at Spike for a new TV deal, but this could really backfire, not only from a financial aspect if they don't sell out these shows, but, you know, you're running the risk of having a crowd full of smarts who are just coming in just to cause havoc and just to take over the show. And good luck, TNA. I hope you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and you mentioned having the show in front of the Hammerstein Ballroom. It could work in their advantage in that it's a very hot crowd. It'll make it look like they have a wrestling product that fans are passionately interested in. You can shoot the Hammerstein Ballroom pretty well. The thing is, like, if fans take over the show, like you said, it's going to kind of lay egg on the face of TNA. But what they have in their hands is that they could still project that as, look how involved our fans are. To the average casual wrestling fan, it may be tough to tell that that's legitimate heat, you know. And I just think that in the Hammerstein Ballroom if they're able to have somewhat of a coherent show with just wrestling and not so much storyline stuff. That can work as branding your product. This is a wrestling brand, and that can also be very shrewd in getting around having people just skewered with storylines, which at this point are piss poor in TNA.
Yeah, I mean, they have the benefit of not running live shows anymore, so they can edit the hell out of whatever happens. But I did see that one of the TNA sound guys twit last week.
Yeah, there was a walk. Was there a walkout last week?
Over late checks. So there's just tons of issues with this company. I really do believe. I know I joked earlier last year about I didn't see TNA lasting up until January 1st, 2014, but I really do believe that this company is headed in the wrong direction. And, you know, as we saw with WCW towards the end, where it just became so bad and so hokey that I believe this is, you know, the final days. I mean, that might not like next week, but, you know, if TNA folded by the end of this year, I wouldn't be surprised at the rate they're going.
Yeah, no, they are definitely, any news you hear about TNA is not good. And
Nate will tell you that TNA is the greatest thing on the planet.
Yeah, we'll definitely give Nate a chance to counter and to tell us why TNA will be in business for the next 10 years. They've been over 10 years now, and so maybe they've got another run in them. But internal problems with WWE have also been abound. You all heard about the leaked Raw script from about a month ago that really caused a bit of a panic in WWE to change their booking plans, apparently, with Cesaro. Now, there's a leaked show for SmackDown, Marcus. And so if you could please just run down a couple of the things that was put out there with the SmackDown show that was taped on Tuesday in London. What exactly leaked?
Yeah, so what happened was they're in London, and it looks like maybe Sky Sports. I don't know who airs SmackDown over there, but somehow one of the feeds was released from the UK, and this was pretty much an in-house feed. So what happens with the major networks is they get a live feed from WWE, and so during commercial breaks and whatnot, the mic's usually hot, and you can hear what's going on when the cameras aren't rolling, and this is what was leaked out. Interesting notes were there was a dark match between Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville that took place. Entertaining match, but the crowd was pretty dead. And there's a couple of interactions with Michael Cole and Vincent Mann on the headset. One in particular where Michael Cole messed up, and I guess Vincent Mann referred to him as JR as a way to not only rub Michael Cole, but just to take a shot at JR. And wow, just the interaction between Cole and Bradshaw, who made reference to, you know, Vince called you JR, not me. And it just the back and forth banter was pretty funny. But, you know, I'm sure JR is not, well, thrilled or surprised to hear that his name is still being tossed around as a guy who, you know, when there's a mistake going on that, you know, his name is being tossed around. But that was interesting, and there was a segment at the very end of the show where Vince was in Michael Cole's ear about trying to get over something in a John Cena match, and Cole goes to Vince, I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically says, you know, I've said this line a shitload of times, you know, how do you want me to get this over? And, you know, Michael Cole sort of starts backpedaling and starts referring to Vince as yes sir, yes sir. So it's just funny to hear the interaction between these two, and it shows you how much control these guys don't have on the mic, because everything is fed to them, either from Kevin Dunn or Vince McMahon. And, you know, when people rip on the announcing crew, it's not their fault, in part because they're being told what to say. If they had more creative control and more freedom to just be themselves and have fun, then I think it would be a better product.
Well, I mean, I would argue that one of the reasons announcing has gotten so bad lately is because they are just being too much of themselves. And it just kind of worries me that there's so much control on WWE announcing when I'm watching Raw, they're just kind of joking around. They're talking about side stories that have nothing to do with matches. Sometimes they'll go entire matches just, you know, ribbing each other or talking about Yogi Berra or something like that. And the fact that Vince McMahon still has control, like, is it him just being bored with what's going on with his product? It just kind of alarms me that they're screwing around is just part of mass manipulation of McMahon controlling them. So you would think McMahon, with all that control, would be able to tell them, hey, guys, get back on task. Let's talk about this match. Let's get over the score line.
Or is the screwing around in part because of the product in the ring? Is it their association between who's wrestling and what's happening on the mic, and Vince sort of, you know, factoring that in and dismissing the talent because of, for whatever reason?
Yeah, and it's really kind of discouraging to hear about the JR thing. Like, with disdain, and JR is one of the few people who knows more about wrestling than Vince McMahon does, and I think that's always just kind of stuck in McMahon's craw. But I would always like to believe that privately, when the doors are closed and they don't think he's watching, that Vince McMahon does respect JR. But to hear that this got leaked, that they still have this internal opinion of JR, really, I don't think it's okay at all, given what he has sacrificed for that company.
I know Jim Ross was, saw an interview with him this week. Sam Roberts did the interview, and where he discussed, he formally admitted that he was fired from the WWE, and it was because of the SummerSlam press conference last year with the video game WWE 14, and how, you know, basically the company felt that he lost control, and he mentioned that how people assumed that he was drunk, and he said it was Bell's policy. So it seems like he's becoming more public about what actually happened, as opposed to this quote-unquote retirement. But you mentioned Jim Ross. He's actually going to be calling Golden Boy Boxing on Monday night, Memorial Day. So it's his first time doing boxing, I believe. And he will be competing against Raw, essentially.
Yeah, no, that's going to be fun. It's going to be Monday night, Jim Ross. And if the commentary gets bad, as I expect it to, I'm definitely going to switch over to see what's going on with boxing, just because Jim Ross, for me personally, would be a draw, and I'm sure I'm not the only person. But now we need to switch over to segment four, which I will make my mysterious disappearance, so don't you guys talk too much crap about me, because I always have Big Brother watching. Segment four is next.
Go ahead, pop off, me and my clique put on. I'm like a young McMahon, I'm here to get your bitch off. Like I'm Ric Flair, middle finger to the big boss, man, aka police, guess I'm over your head like hit toss. Kill these niggas, that's no pride. Chill, these niggas want no pride. That chopper body like corn swabs, I can't see you shot him like Sin Cara. Roll it up with that shit loud, it ain't mine if that shit not. Ladies hate when I rip rude, but they in love with this Jake vibe. It's like, nah, say hello to my python. I'm CM Punk with that mic, y'all. She go to sleep, cause my pipe bomb. Winning, blessed I be hurting feelings. Niggas is Curtis Axe, so my rap is like Kurt Henning. And it, don't it? I'm such a charmer. Come crown Vic. Not talking whip, I'm thinking Lawler. Cause I'm royalty. But we talking cars, it's not a problem. Just bought two big bodies, call them Kamala and Umaga. What up? You're talking to the black guy. My gang real, but I ain't never no vampire. Look at all that ice he got on. Look at that icy title. Picking out my bill, man, cause I still feel like I'm dying.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. PlaceToBeNation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best in comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. I want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Alfred's out. Nate's back in. Marcus is remaining the same to close up shop for yet another week. And we're going to do it the way we do each and every week. And that is we'll be often imitated but never duplicated. Segment 4, the segment where we take a look at all of the ratchetness in the world of sports and pop culture. You know, we talk about druggies. We talk about people looking for attention. We talk about craziness. We talk about people that are thirstier than Jameis Winston at a Burger King. Google that, kids. But sometimes we have follow-up stories. And last week, one of the stories that we talked about was Michael Sam and the hullabaloo surrounding his proposed reality show with the Oprah Winfrey Network. And we've got an update on that, Marcus.
We do. The reality show that Michael Sam was had to deal with Owen's own network is been postponed indefinitely. Something had to go, either Michael Sam or the reality show, and the reality show got the boot. So hopefully this is a lesson to him, and he will not decide to, you know, if he gets cut, that's one thing, if they still want to do a show at that point. But, you know, if he's serious about the NFL, then this is the best move for him.
Absolutely. I mean, this sends a good message to the organization, sends a good message to his teammates. This show is going to be there regardless of whether, you know, he's in the league or out of the league. And obviously from Oprah's perspective, you'd want to have the show on now and strike while the iron is hot. But this is a story that can be told in the offseason. You know, it might even be a better story after the season if he makes the team and has a couple good plays and he can give his perspective through the year. And then, you know, instead of a series now where you'd basically be looking at training camp and the big hook would be whether the guy gets cut or not.
Yeah, I mean, if this was a true docu-series or docu-drama, then, I mean, he should have a pretty boring life once training camp starts. You go to training camp, you go home, you study your plays, you go to sleep. Where's the drama? So if they're trying to, you know, create artificial drama or artificial storylines built around the story, then yeah, that's just, I mean, it's just asking for not only criticism from your teammates, but from other teams and players around the league.
And it's you know, do you want to be a documentary? Do you want to, you know, kind of chronicle this historic moment, chronicle this kid as he makes a transition to the NFL and does something that no Gath athlete has done before? Or is it a garden variety reality show where you're exploring things? And like you said, training camp is pretty boring. And is the only reason you're there is because he's gay and you're like, oh, he might go on some fabulous adventure in the nighttime that nobody else does because they're not gay and they're not hitting the town. And if that's what you're looking for, then that's a pretty, and I'm trying to parse my words because unlike you, I like Oprah Winfrey. That's a pretty shameful premise, if that's the case.
Listen, Jackie Robinson wouldn't be doing a reality series on breaking the racial lines and getting into baseball. So, you know, just imagine, while they're two separate apples and oranges, just imagine what would Jackie Robinson do in the situation. It certainly wouldn't be a reality show. He'd be focused on trying to be the best player, gay or straight, out there. And you can't be that when you have cameras following you 24/7.
Yeah, the best way that you can be a trailblazer is to be a good player.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he doesn't make the team, then not that this doesn't mean anything, but the impact is not going to be as deep as if, you know, it were a gay all-pro, you know, or at least a good gay player. And we don't even know if Michael Sam is a good player yet.
Yeah, I mean, well, based off our last, you know, experience or last time we saw him work out, it's looking like no, because he did not perform well at the combine and his workout. So He OTAs for St. Louis, trying to see when they start. But whenever they start, it should be soon. He really needs to come into camp and, you know, work his ass off and build before the preseason starts in August, because every game, every snap is going to matter, especially more for him, not only because he's a gay player, but because they're so deep at that position at the defensive line that it's going to take a lot of hard work and for him to really impress the coaches for him to make that team.
The last time we saw Michael Sam, he didn't look so hot, but maybe, much like Tim Tebow, he's not a practice player. Maybe when the game is on the line, that's when the light bulb switches off, and that's when you see what kind of player he is, Marcus.
So he's not Peyton Manning?
So you can't judge a man by practice. We're talking about games, and like you said, Peyton Manning, that is a man who is all about the game, and now there's a game all about him, allegedly. You have the iPhone, don't you, Marcus?
I do.
Yes, I'm sure you head over to iTunes and download apps all the time.
Too many.
There's a new app you might have to check out and review for us next week, created by a former teammate of the Denver Broncos quarterback, called Smash Man. Smash Man is a new iPhone app. The story reported by TMZ, the app is inspired by Peyton's disastrous Super Bowl performance, and it's already blowing up. Brandon King is a defensive back that played with Manning in 2010, and he's developed a game where you control a quarterback who bears a striking resemblance to Peyton Manning. And I'm looking at the picture now, and it does. It looks like a King of the Hill version of Peyton Manning. Like, you're controlling this little Peyton Manning figure, and you're chased by a defense that resembles the Seahawks. And basically, you're trying not to get killed. And the object is 44 points, which is one more than the Seahawks scored in the Super Bowl. But King says that it's nearly impossible. No one's done it so far. And business has been great with over 2,000 downloads in the first week. But he has not heard from one Peyton Manning yet.
I don't think you will hear from Peyton Manning on this.
If you're Peyton, are you flattered about this? Are you pissed off about this? Or do you even care?
Nah, he's had a good sense of humor. He probably doesn't care. He's probably more upset that a former teammate did it. But, you know, I think he can probably laugh it off.
Apparently the gameplay is similar to Flappy Birds. I don't know if you played that.
Oh, yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, so it's like a football version of Flappy Bird featuring Peyton Manning and Peyton Manning in air quotes and the fake Seattle Seahawks.
Former teammate, man.
Yeah, Brandon King. He played with him for one season, and as far as King says, he's not worried about hurting his feelings. I think he'd probably laugh. If anybody could laugh at this, it would be him.
Yeah, let's hope.
But, I mean, if you look at the picture, like the illustration in the iTunes store, it looks just like a King of the Hill rendition of what Peyton Manning would look like.
Let's see. Brandon King. Currently a free agent, so he won't be signing with Denver anytime soon.
No, won't be signing with Denver.
Nope.
Maybe he'll sign with Seattle because doesn't one of the no, I was thinking Microsoft. That's Paul Allen, but I was thinking Microsoft, but it's Apple.
Yeah.
Is Apple involved with any team?
No.
Okay, so yeah, I was going to say maybe that would be an avenue for him, but no, I don't see anybody knocking down this guy's door. But good on Brandon King, though. I mean, that's a nice side hustle to have, being an app developer.
Yeah, it looks like he's out of the league. He didn't play at all last season. He was mostly like a practice squad guy. So, yeah, not bad. Not a bad side job for or second career for this guy.
He had a lot of time to work on code, and he probably went through a bunch of different iterations of the game. He's like, hold on, man. It's going to be a game starring Tony Romo. No, the game always crashes in the fourth quarter. Hold on. It's going to be a game starring Jay Cutler. Nobody wants to play with Jay Cutler. We'll go with Peyton. Like, as a Jets fan, would you have liked to see the Mark Sanchez version of this game?
No. I've experienced too many game-like experiences with Mark Sanchez.
I was surprised nobody made, like, a butt fumble app.
But, I mean, that would get old. I mean, there's only so much you can do with the butt fumble.
Yeah, it can get old, but, I mean, that was pretty huge for a few months. And, you know, these, like, I've got an Android, so I go to Google Play.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these knockoff games that seem, like, inspired by current events that are just, like, Angry Birds or Candy Crush. And they're just, like, it's Kanye Crush.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like, these... these bootleg games that are just kind of take riffs on pop culture. So I'm surprised nobody came up with like a butt fumble to just make a quick buck off of that.
We're trying to put the butt fumble in the past. I mean, that's old news. That's focusing on the New Jets and Michael Vick.
Have you had time to move on from Sanchez? Are you finally divorced from that?
Yeah, well, what helped last year was the injury, that the fact that he didn't play at all. So that really helped speed up the process of the divorce. But yeah, and I've come to terms that Mark isn't the quarterback anymore, and I have to root for Michael Vick now.
Yes! Welcome to the dog side!
Or the dog side. I don't know.
Let it go, Marcus.
Yeah.
Let it
go. Uh-huh.
I was going to say something, but I don't want Peter problems this week.
No.
Or any week, but yeah, Especially this week. So, yeah, that's Peyton Manning's game, Smash Man, created by a former teammate. You know, that's crazy, but crazier things have happened, especially in North Korea, Brother Marcus.
Yes. So, WWE Hall of Famer Tony Atlas, who is currently on Legends House. He's one of the members of the show.
Do you watch Legends House, by the way? I know you got the network.
No, I don't watch.
What do you watch on the network? Mainly the archives or any of the original stuff?
The original stuff, I watch the countdown shows every week. Those are really good. Those are, you know, the top 10 fill in the blank here. And they feature a lot of the talent and a lot of people who are fans of the company, which I find interesting. So that's always good. I watch NXT. I watch whatever pay-per-view that John and Way are reviewing that week. It makes it a lot easier when they're doing something that's one of the major three companies that you can just watch on demand. And recently I've been watching a lot of Clash of Champions. They put up all 35 Clash of Champions shows. And this is like the first big chunk of new WCW content since the launch, because they've had pay-per-views up there, but they haven't had night shows or anything like that. So that's been fun to go back and watch, but I'm just waiting for Nitro to come out. And once they start rolling out Nitros every week, I think that'll be when I'll, you know, dive back in on a daily basis to the network.
Yeah, that might be when I actually go in and purchase the network, because that's, to me, the library is the most attractive part. I've heard good things about the Countdown show, but I'm more interested in the Nitros and like the clashes. That's appealing too, because I remember some of those. Like it was the 88 clash.
The first one?
The first one with the time limit draw.
Yeah.
Sting and Flair. And then another one I remember for some reason is, I think it was New York Knockout. And it was for two reasons. One, there was this match between Paul E. Dangerously, a.k.a. Paul Heyman, and Medusa, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, and then there was also, it was like the Nasty Boys versus Cactus Jack and Max Payne.
Oh, Max Payne.
Man Mountain Rock.
Man, I some of these Clash shows, especially from like the early 90s, it's like
P.O.P. and News.
And like every show I've seen now, I feel like Johnny Bad's been everyone, every show. He's every show, Johnny Bad has a match against whoever. I'm just like, man, this dude. But yeah, the network, there's just too much content, I think. I don't know, unless you know where you want to go. I mean, there's tons of stuff I haven't even sniffed at, because it's just too much. I don't have 3 hours to spend watching ECW TV on a weekly basis. So,
yeah, if you were Tony Atlas, you could start sniffing at the feet.
Oh yeah, he's there. Well documented foot fetish.
He shares that with your head coach.
Oh, but I think he goes on a different level. I think Rex is in denial. Tony is out front about his his foot love.
He's proud of his foot love.
Yeah. But yeah, Tony Atlas wants to wrestle in North Korea. And before you say wrestling in North Korea, what do they know about wrestling in North Korea? Well, back in the day, I believe this is still the record, but there was a show that drew 150,000 people in North Korea. And I want to say this was WCW or WWE? You know about this show?
Let's see. What year was it?
Oh, this was,
Here it is.
Flair and Oki.
Collision in Korea, yes. With WCW New Japan.
Yeah.
Back in 95.
So
yeah, the first day attendance was 150,000, the second day was 190,000.
Yeah, so.
I wonder if that's on the network.
It is not.
Some good matches. Chris Benoit and Too Cold Scorpio and Inoki and Flair, the Steiner brothers versus Hase and Sasaki. Yeah, They did a lot of that stuff back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, and for them to do North Korea, which, I mean, now I'm sure if Vince McMahon did something similar, he'd be crucified, but for them to do it in 95, that's pretty bold. But yeah, they, granted, you know, the people there were probably forced to be there, but those are still the two largest shows in professional wrestling history in terms of attendance, and Tony Atlas wants to now wrestle in North Korea, and yes, he's 70, and yes, he shouldn't be in the ring, but, you know, for some reason, he wants to, you know, see this through. It'll never happen, by the way, but...
You thought Dennis Rodman in Korea was a bad idea. Tony Atlas. Mr. USA. Yeah. Tony Atlas.
And there is going to be a show in August that they announced. They haven't announced, you know, Tony, that Tony's involved. But I don't see how I'm not sure how even Dennis Rodman got over there and got back into the U.S., how that worked out in terms of what kind of permission he needed. But, yeah, that's not wise, Tony. I wouldn't want to run that risk of going to North Korea and then coming back to the States and finding out, hey, you can't come back in. Did you see what happened to Mos Def today?
Mos Def? What happened to Mos Def?
Mos Def was living in South Africa. He has a tour in the U.S. He got to the U.S. and they said, nope, you can't come in.
Oh, wow.
Immigration issues. So... I don't know if he had to go right back to South Africa. I'm guessing he had to, but he's a U.S. citizen who's been, you know, pretty much locked out of his country.
Wow. Yeah, it was Mos Def now going by Yasiin Bey.
He's still Mos.
Yeah, I was going to say, but that name change is not helping you with... Yeah. I'm just saying, brother, like Mark Cuban alluded to earlier, sometimes... Like, yeah, you might not want to change your name to something. I mean, you're Mos Def. You put out a record with, I believe, was it a simulated assassination of President Bush?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're not like, it's not like he has friends at the State Department.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with Tony Atlas.
My thing about Tony Atlas is, I mean, at least with the Dennis Rodman thing, the Koreans invited him, at least that's my understanding. At least, you know, if not for nothing else, for a PR stunt from Kim Jong-un. Tony Atlas, I don't believe anybody's contacted Tony from the Korean side.
No, I don't think they know.
It's something Tony just came up with out of his own head.
I'm pretty sure they don't know the work of Tony Atlas.
They're not familiar with the great Samba Simba years?
No, not so much.
They're not familiar with his great work in WWE CW?
Nope.
Oh. And here's the thing. I I don't know. I don't know about Tony Atlas. He just seems like a weird dude altogether.
Very weird.
In a sport full of weird dudes, he seems like a weird dude.
Pardon me. He's not 70s. He's 60. TMC got that wrong.
I don't know. I don't know what you do with a guy like Tony Atlas, because Legends House, that was filmed, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
2012.
So 2 years ago. So it's not like he's doing stuff day to day for the company.
Yeah, not anymore, no.
I mean, he's got a book out. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
He's got I don't know if it's a biography or an autobiography. The link's not sending me there, but it's called Atlas. Too much, too soon.
Hmm. I'll step that.
Oh man! So no love for Tony Atlas. Tony Atlas's autobiography.
No. Once I heard Torp Bauer's story about the time when he was introduced into the Hall of Fame, and the pyro went off, and he ran out the building. Yeah. I was like, all right, this dude's weird.
Yeah, and he's crying like he's a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happens if they have fireworks in North Korea at the end of the show? What does he do?
I don't think those will be fireworks.
Oh, man.
If he thought the fireworks were bombs.
Yeah, he's going to the wrong place.
Like, yeah, you know they make bombs over there, brother.
They drop bombs over there for fun, just to test it out.
Yeah, you may not want to go over there. Although I am looking forward to the Tony Atlas sit down with Anderson Cooper after he returns.
Oh man,
Tony, why would you go over there? Well, I was sitting back looking at the feet catalog, and I saw some pretty feet from Korean women. That was my whole motivation, Anderson.
You got to hear the Tony Atlas laugh. There you go.
Oh, if only there was money in being a Tony Atlas impersonator.
Yeah, or money being Tony Atlas.
Yeah. What do you think, like, scene like on the convention circuit? Tony Atlas or Virgil?
Virgil.
Virgil?
Yeah. Because Virgil's whole gimmick now is that he's the grumpy convention guy who doesn't want to be bothered, but you can take pictures of him. So I think Virgil cleans up.
$25, yeah.
I told you the guy at John Away's meetup, that the guy met Virgil, and Virgil took $40 off of him for a picture.
I can't knock the hustle, though. I can't knock the hustle.
I can't either. If you're stupid enough to pay money to take pictures with wrestlers, then...
I was going to say, if some mark is willing to give Virgil $40 or $50 for a picture, that's on them.
Yeah. For a picture. Come on.
Yeah. Like, for real, like if I saw Virgil at the Piggly Wiggly or at the 7-Eleven, and I'd take a picture, I'd give him like $10 and a pack of Newports.
I wouldn't give him that. What's he going to do? Tell you no? You can take a picture of him. If you want to be in the picture, then yeah, you can tell you no. But come on, you're Virgil.
I'm just trying to help Virgil out, man.
Yeah. Times are rough.
Somebody who will never be... You think, as many different characters and as long as Virgil was in the business, like, I don't know. Have we ever heard Virgil, like, do a shoot interview or anything like that? Because I was saying, like, why is he never one of the talking heads on these documentaries?
I haven't. I'm sure there's probably a U-Shoot interview with him out there on YouTube. But I haven't. You know, the last time Virgil was on TV was, I feel like he was on like Raw 1000, one of those type of shows where he was there with DiBiase maybe, but it's rare that you ever see him on programming anymore.
Yeah, but I think if he actually got back on TV, it would ruin his gimmick at the conventions.
Virgil, 51 years old. Let's see.
Mike Jones.
Last episode, 2010. With DiBiase. Still letting that damage go.
That's what I would do, man. If I was in charge of the WWE Network, I would just go completely racial with it and have Black Legends House. Tony Atlas, Virgil,
Coco.
Coco, who's my man that had to get his foot amputated?
Nah, Kamala can't do the house, man. You can't get around.
So you get in like one of those scooters?
No, that's sad.
I'm trying to think who else. You'd have to have the Godfather, comma, the ultimate fighting machine in the house.
Yeah.
He's probably the most well adjusted post wrestling.
It's managing a strip club.
Yeah.
Cheetahs.
A buff bag will show up every now and then. Yeah, Black Legends House. I'm gonna pitch that. Maybe they can air it during February.
Who else we missing? Ahmed. We couldn't understand. Ahmed. He'd be no good for TV.
Ron Simmons.
Oh, Ron would be good. Ron would be like the level headed person in the house.
Yes. Ron would make sense. Yeah, he'd be the one like going for the when they do the confessionals, he'd just be sitting around just, I don't know what's going on. Tony's trying to look at people's feet and Virgil's asking for money to cook breakfast.
Yeah. Rocky Johnson, would he do it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if Rocky Johnson would do it. Oh, he might be one of those like special guests.
Yeah, he'll stop by the house.
Yeah, he'll just stop by the house. I'm trying to think, Jacqueline.
Yeah, you can have Jazz show up.
Yeah, Jacqueline, Jazz, Teddy. Oh, Teddy Long's got to be on.
Oh, where's Teddy? Where has he been?
Where has Teddy Long been?
With JTG.
Now I'm going to look up, yeah, just because I need to figure this, I need to find this out before we end the show. Where the hell has Teddy Long been? Long haven't been on TV since the July 19th episode of SmackDown last year.
Oh, wow.
When Vicky Guerrero was named the new general manager and escorted him out of the building.
Craig Pittman, could Craig Pittman come by?
Oh, Sergeant Craig Pittman. I don't know. See, yeah, now we got to get into two different houses. Now we got to have like a WCW, Black Legends house.
That's not enough WCW. I mean, where would Tuco Scorpio go? Which house would he go in?
Oh, shit. I'm saying WCW, you could have Ernest the Cat Miller.
Mark Merrill can go in.
Mark Merrill, yeah, Johnny B. Van. You could have Sergeant Craig Pittman, Ranger Ross. Ice Tray. Oh, who's my man? Hardworking Bobby Walker.
Yeah.
What's the guy that was in all that trouble for human trafficking?
Oh, Mr. Hughes?
No, not Mr. Hughes. He was the dude that always used to wear the tights with like one leg was cut off of the tights. Oh,
Norman Smiley? No, not Norman Smiley.
No, not Norman. Norman Smiley could be in the house.
Yeah.
Damn, now I got to look this up.
Human trafficking?
Yeah, it was Hardbody Harrison.
Oh, okay.
Hardbody Harrison, yes. Yes, Hardbody Harrison. Sentenced to life. Oh, he's currently spending life in prison.
That's a different kind of house. The big house.
The sex trafficking.
Oh.
Yeah.
High voltage. Yeah.
Hardbody Harrison convicted in 2007.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. WCW had some great black jobbers back in the day.
I forgot about Ice Train.
Yeah, Ice Train.
Oh, that was Big D before Big D was around.
Swole with the No Limit Soldiers.
That's when I stopped watching.
DJ Ran.
Forgot about Butch Reed.
Oh, yeah, Butch Reed. Yeah, he was in Doom. Stevie Ray.
Oh, yeah.
Booker T, yeah.
Yeah, I think WCW is the better house.
Yeah. The Black Legends house. Yeah. All right, so I think we're good this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, once you talk about WCW stars or WCW jobbers convicted for sex trafficking, it's kind of... You kind of reached your limit for the week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Craig Pittman wasn't expecting a shout-out this week on the show.
No, shout-out to Craig Pittman. All the great WCW black jobbers. Remember that feud he had with Cobra? Based on the basis of the feud was that Pittman deserted Cobra.
In the war.
Yeah, and instead of going to a military tribunal, he's settling it on WCW Saturday Night.
Saturday Night, not even the big show.
Not even on the pay-per-view.
The B-show. At least it wasn't like worldwide or something like that. He at least got time on a national network.
Oh, man. Yeah, man. WCW had some great shows back in the day. Like, Saturday Night was for a B-show. Saturday Night was, I'd watch Saturday Night.
Well, I mean, it wasn't their A-show at one point, so.
Yeah, one point, before Nitro. Like, to me, even when they had Thunder, Saturday Night was still the better show.
Yeah, way better than Thunder. Thunder was never good. It was more entertaining. More ha-ha. Let's laugh at WCW, but never worth watching.
Then the other show I used to like was the main event with Gordon Solie.
Chris Cruz?
Yeah, Chris Cruz, Gordon Solie.
Yeah.
And the reason I liked the main event was because they always did, and this is something that wrestling doesn't do anymore. Every week they had the top 10 contenders list.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Lex Luger was always the number one contender for some reason. And Michael Hayes would just make random appearances. Like, coming in at number 9, beautiful Bobby Eaton. Who the hell did Bobby Eaton beat this week?
Yeah. Dark match. You didn't see it.
He beat Hardbody Harrison.
Yeah.
If we learn nothing else this week, don't get involved in sex trafficking.
No, not good.
It's not a good look, no.
Or North Korea. Don't do that either.
Yeah. Sex trafficking in North Korea are not good looks for you.
No.
So. That's going to do it for this week. Before we get out of here, Marcus, where can the people find you and conversate with you and reminisce about great black WCW jobbers?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
You can follow Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa on Twitter at This Is Nasty. Check him out on Bleacher Report. Check out the articles and the videos. Send him your suggestions for new WWE Network programming because I guess they're stealing from him anyway.
Yeah.
You may have new ideas and then eventually they'll trickle their way up to Stanford.
Future show in the making, maybe.
You can check me out on Twitter in the number 8 MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. I have a weekly Impact review that this week should be exciting because this week's Impact has been a pretty decent show. Sooner or later, I'm going to bring Marcus over to the dark side.
Nope.
It's already started with Michael Vick. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump from Vick to Impact Wrestling.
I'll watch the final Impact Wrestling. Whenever they decide to shut this piece of shit down, I'll tune in just for you.
You'll watch the New York shows, won't you?
Yeah, I'll have to stay off the spoilers for that. Because that's what really kills the buzz. I mean, it's bad enough as it is, but once you know the results, it's like, all right. So, I'll try to stay away from spoilers for those three shows, which will be 6 weeks of tapings almost. really hard.
I want to see if that crowd, because my experience of being at Impact Live is that like the first hour and a half, it's actually a good atmosphere, but you just get drained. And I only had to sit through two shows. I sat through two tapings. When you got 2 and 3 and 4 tapings going on, like there's no way that crowd is going to stay invested. So it'll be interesting to see. Because that New York crowd should be lively, but will that energy get sucked out of them?
Well, if they do two shows a night over 3 nights, they're not filming 2 hours of material because they have so much backstage stuff. So you figure 90 minutes for each show, it's what, 3 hours? If they keep it to a decent amount of time, I think they should be fine.
Yeah. If I mean, you're counting on TNA to do the right thing.
But, I mean, but really such, though, is if you're going to, like, say if you're going to night three of tapings and you don't know about night one or two, then it's hard to react to what's happening when you have no idea what storylines are being pushed or anything like that.
Yeah, especially if they're taken out of order.
Oh, that too. Yeah, that doesn't help.
So, yeah, we'll see. I think there should be good episodes of television, but we'll see. So, that is the TNA recap. You can check that out at placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the latest in sports and pop culture. You can check out all of us at CosPod on Twitter, KOS_POD. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. We've had a lot of new listeners in the past few weeks, so shout out to you guys. You know who you are. Thanks for checking out the show. And if you enjoy it, please go to iTunes while you're downloading Smash Man and rate and review the show and share it with your friends. That is going to do it this week, Marcus.
Yes. Thanks for listening. I'm always, you know, blown away when people let me know they listen to the show, because I just think I'm just talking to Alfred and Nate, and, you know, I don't realize half the time that people are actually listening. So I do appreciate it.
Yeah, I got hit up, a listener hit me up on Twitter. I guess they found us through one of the law shows.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it's you never know where the listenerships come from. We've had some listeners that have come from other podcasts, like Tourists vs. Zombies or Mr. Throwback Thursday, when they hype us up. So appreciate, shout out to our friends in the podcasting community. And, yeah, you know, it's great because, you know, you never know. Somebody could be listening to this on their way to work. Somebody could be, you know, listening to this before they go to sleep. Somebody could be listening to this when they get their rec time in the yard. Shout out to Hardbody Harrison.
If we have any prison listeners, please let me know. I'll put something in your commissary. I'll put
something on the commissary?
I'll put 20 on the commissary.
So, yeah, I think maybe one day if you can write to us, if you're locked up, write to the Kings of Sport. Kingsofsport@gmail.com, and maybe we'll do like a special D-Block edition.
Do they have email in prison?
I'd assume. Yeah, maybe it'd have to be snail mail.
Yeah, I'm not even on my address, so.
Write to Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa.
Yeah.
In Paramount, California. We just started Pen Pal Network.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for this week. A lot of fun. We'll be back next week with more from the NBA postseason, more from the world of professional wrestling, and more from the general ratchetness out there in the world.
Don't just stop the Stanley Cup now. The Kings could be back in the Stanley Cup by next week. So.
Oh, yeah, do you realize I have not looked at 1 minute of the Stanley Cup since Bill was on the show? Like, I was watching for Boston, and once Boston got eliminated, I haven't been paying attention.
If it's Rangers teams, we'll have Bill back on, and we can set up a bet.
Oh yeah, yeah. Kings of Sport versus Mr. Throwback Thursday, little wager.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be good. So
Rangers are up 2-0 in the series. So,
yeah, I know Jamie and Bill are Rangers fans.
Okay,
and you and Alfred are Kings fans.
Yeah,
and I am the neutral party.
There you go.
Yeah, we might have to set something up. So yeah, Jamie and Bill, we know you're listening. Get your thinking caps on. Maybe they can send us some of that death. Talking about. So yeah, that's good thinking. Good thinking. So, yeah, we'll be back next week. I think I'm going to head out and watch X-Men. Been hearing some good things about it.
All right.
Yeah, so Marcus is going to go and screw around with his car. I'm going to go watch Mutants for the next 2 hours, and Big Nasty's going to do what Big Nasty does, and we'll be back here next week. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.